Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Lazy CEO Podcast. I'm Jane Liu. Join my conversations with the entrepreneurs behind the iconic brands we all know and love.
If you have a sweet tooth, you're going to love today's guest. It's Daniel Cote, the founder of Fun Day Sweets. Fun Day Sweets is a natural confectionery brand that is sugar-free, but honestly, you couldn't taste the difference. What started with Daniel formulating the mixtures and playing with different ingredients in his kitchen bench is now the fastest growing Better For You lolly brand in Australia, selling to over 5,000 outlets and selling millions of bags every quarter. In this episode, we talk about just how the heck do you even start making a food product, how he dealt with such high minimum order quantities, and how he found stockers, especially with the majors such as Woolies, Coles, and Chemist Warehouse. All right, let's get into it.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Oh, we're starting. Casey, welcome to the podcast. We absolutely love Fun Day in the office. We like binge on this stuff. Where does your journey start?
Great question. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. The journey starts probably childhood, being a pretty big kid, being a bit overweight, really enjoying lollies, chocolates, all the sort of bad things that you're not meant to just binge on and enjoy, like you said. I did that a lot as a kid and the effects of that were, I guess, weight gain.
You know, when I was like, I was 18 when I realized that biscuits weren't good for you and they were full of sugar.
Well, I think the education, like I'm born late 80s and it was very different to the way that we thought about food and the education around
food
and the pyramids. And I have very supportive, great parents, but it was also a bit of a, like a dieting culture as well. And it was always, you know, watch what you're eating and sort of things like that. And that was sort of the times. And that's sort of where I grew up in. And I don't really blame anyone for it. It was just, it was what it was in like the early 90s. That's what was happening. Luckily, things have progressed since that point. And I do eat biscuits and I do eat some chocolates and I do eat things, but now more in moderation. The essence of sort of Fun Day was that I wasn't eating any sugar or any confectionery because I decided it's time to lose weight when I finished school. And just cut it all out. And that was a pretty bad time. It's pretty shitty where you've loved something and enjoying something so much, you just don't have it anymore. I dabbled in sugar-free candy. And I don't know if you've ever eaten it or seen YouTube videos of people that eat sugar-free lollies. But, you know, typically it says excess consumption may cause laxative effects. You see it on like chewing gum. You see it on like classic sugar-free products. And like, it's really true. Like it's there for a reason. And I used to get like violently ill when I would eat it. So I was like, oh, great. I can't eat full sugar because I'm full sugar lollies. So I'm trying not to eat sugar. I can't eat the sugar-free stuff because it's making me feel horrific. And then for years, I just didn't eat anything. And then as my journey in life progressed and career and so forth, I realized that you could develop a lolly with better ingredients that were a lot less sugar, but still tasted really good. And that's when the idea of saying like Fun Day, we can actually solve a problem in the market for people who want confectionery, but don't want the excessive sugar. And that's really where it all sort of began.
So how did you go from like knowing that this could be done, like trying it someone else's product to being like, I'm going to be the person to do it and bring it to market?
Yeah, good question. I always wanted to run a business.
What were you doing before?
So I graduated commerce and law in Perth. And I was just saying before I'd started working at Luxury Escapes when it was sort of a nothing business or Lux Group. And they had lots of businesses all in e-com and Luxury Escapes was the big travel business there. And so I started doing a bit of legal, but I really enjoyed the commercial side of things. I was there for about 4 or 5 years and saw it grow from there's about 30 staff, about 400 staff when I left. Yeah. And it was just, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars when I left. It was just amazing to see it all. And that really inspired me. And the CEO was fantastic and gave me opportunities to run independent businesses within the larger business. Very low risk because they weren't performing very well. And I was like, have a crack. If you can turn them around, great. I bought a couple to like break even. And I was like, this is really hard, you know, but I still got a lot of experience. And then for a few years after that,
like
I worked
what? What kind of businesses within?
One was called Pinch Me. It was a sampling business. The other one was Lust Have It, which was like is Bella Box, beauty sort of box subscription-based business. And then I was helping out with some of their other sort of like more affiliate-based businesses as well, Spreets, which was owned by Channel 7 at the time.
So you're kind of like an entrepreneur within the business.
Within the business. And yeah, that was great. Just because I just expressed my interest.
You know, I always say this to people. I'm like, if you want to start a business and you don't know what, go and like work for a startup because you'll get all the experience.
100%.
And figure it out.
Absolutely agree. I guess after that point, I left after about 4 or 5 years and I got involved in vitamins and supplements. So that was like the foray into FMCG, vitamin supplements, health products, supermarkets, that whole sort of realm. And I spent about 3 years, 4 years in two different businesses running it. And it was at the last business I decided, you know, I think at that time I was probably like just over 30, 31 or something. I didn't have children at the time. It was a really great time to sort of like have a crack and start working on something. And then I took a weekend off, flew to LA and the UK over about a 4-day period. And I was like, I'm just going to go in and get inspired. Like I'm taking an empty suitcase. And I know that I love this health and wellness side of things, but I have no idea what I'm going to do. But I knew Whole Foods is like the awesome place in the US that you go and find inspiration and new brands. And I went there and I bought like a few grand worth of stock between the UK and the USA and found products in that market that I knew were replacing the typical refined sugars for ingredients like tapioca starch and fiber and chicory root fiber. And I was like, they still taste really good. Like this is possible. After that trip, I basically came back, quit my job, and I was like, I'm all in.
Wow. I love that story. I just love this idea. Like normally, if it's anyone else, it's like, I'm going to go to Paris and like New York on a shopping trip and it's all research. But actually it was like, or were you just like being like unhinged and going on this big like candy spree?
Well, I didn't know it was going to be candy at the time. I was open to like, was going to be a vitamin, a supplement? I just knew I liked the healthy snacking, therapeutic, something good for you. But I love the food. I'm just a massive foodie. So I was like, I'm going to pursue my passion. And why I went to LA and the UK, I was like, well, LA is the epicenter of innovation in terms of new products around food. And I, you know, got a hotel and sort of did the Google map within a kilometer of like Whole Foods and Sprouts and all the sort of big retailers and just spent a day or two just buying stuff up. And then I was like, well, the other side of the world where that tends to happen is in Europe. And the UK is probably where it's all happening. So I did both of those markets. The USA was hugely successful. The UK, I realized, wow, it's leaps behind everyone else. And I didn't really learn anything from that market, but I'm still glad that I went.
Did you have a crazy customs declaration form on the way back?
No, I don't. Maybe I was supposed to, but I didn't. It was like suitcases of lollies and they're like questioning, you know, what's in there. And I said, oh, it's just, you know, snacks and kids products.
I just really crazy shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so what's next? You came back with all the products.
Yep.
Jet lagged and you're like, okay, what do I do?
Yeah. So at that time, I had just got married a couple of months prior. So I got back.
Is she like, he's lost the plot?
A little bit, because I'm the guy that's like, oh, how good, listen to this business idea. You know, and she'll be like, that's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life. Do not pursue that.
Yeah.
But I came back from the US with a couple of products and I was like, this is what I'm thinking. And she's like, oh, that's good.
Yeah. You know,
I got like the validation from her, which is really good. You need partner support often in this.
You butter it up with the actual products.
I did. Well, funnily enough, like with the products we found in the US that were really good at the time, we ended up just buying thousands of dollars worth of stock over the course of like the next 12 months when I didn't have a product in market. So we really got hooked on the low sugar lollies and low sugar snacks that were coming out of America. But in Australia, we're just so far behind. We were big supporters of the brand and she was definitely on board with it from the beginning. Went on a honeymoon. While I was in the honeymoon, it was like, you know, waiting in the airport. I was sending emails to ingredient supplier all over the world so that when I came back, I could hit the ground running. And that's basically what happened. That was just before COVID, had about 4 months or so to develop formulation and come up with recipes. Why it was 4 months was because I didn't realize COVID was going to kick in and you weren't really going to be able to go into a lab or you weren't going to be able to get food techs or scientists because everyone was sort of closed door policy and you couldn't go into another workplace that wasn't your own. luckily got to a point after about 4 months of doing a lot of home formulations and tests on the kitchen shelf that we got a recipe that was really good. And then it was, you got to find a manufacturer, and that sort of whole, that kicked off another chain of events of where in the world am I going to get this product made? Because almost no one is making it. Australia, in terms of food manufacturing, is not that strong. And particularly at the time, 4 years ago, they really had no idea what a low sugar fiber, high fiber lolly was. So ended up going and finding one in Switzerland.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's how
just
the business
by Googling
started.
It?
I couldn't go to Switzerland because of COVID. So it was a combination of Google. And for that particular manufacturer, it was a LinkedIn message to the CEO at the time, really professing my passion for this project and what I was about to do.
Okay, I have a question about people who just like go and do these big pitches. Like, who do you say you are? Like, what do you think was so enticing about your pitch? Did you give yourself like title?
I can't really remember the exact message, but I think I was pretty honest. And it was like, I've quit my job. I've got a legal background, but I've been working in vitamins and supplements. I'm searching for a manufacturer that shares the same visions for what I'm about to work on, which is a low sugar, high fiber lolly to disrupt this market. And these are the sort of key reasons why I think it's really good for you and for me. And ultimately, I just want a good relationship and a good partner in doing this whole venture. And I think it was as really simple as that. And she connected me with the sort of account manager or product developer at the manufacturer at the time and sort of just kicked off a relationship. But that was probably after 50 or 60 attempts at finding a manufacturer. And either they said, no, we're not prepared to make for you for whatever reason, or who are you? And like, what business are you? And why, I don't, you know, it's too much risk in working with you because you've got no runs on the board.
Yeah.
So it really took a lot of grit just to find
just
someone.
To keep going. Yeah. And if you don't ask, you don't get.
Exactly.
And it just takes the one person.
That's right.
Let's go back to like your kitchen bench where you're like just making your own formulation. Did you just Google like recipes?
The interesting thing about food is all the ingredients are in the back of the packet.
But sometimes they're just like, they look like made up science words. Yes, like you have to Google it.
I know food really well. Yeah. Like it's a passion of mine. I love cooking. And so for me, this was just like high-end technical cooking.
Yeah.
So you really start with, well, is there a product in the market that you love and you want to be or you're inspired by? Great. I know that they're using these sorts of ingredients. Well, how do you procure these ingredients? So Google, like, how do I find tapioca? How do I find chicory fiber? How do I find flavors? It's sort of a process of elimination. Well, like, I'm going to create a gummy bear. So what are the recipes online about making a gummy bear? So you've got like your list of your ingredients, then you've got a list of the recipe. And it's like, well, if I take out all the sugar and I start putting in these other ingredients, which are to replace the sugar and give it other functional benefits, could that work? And that's really the reverse engineering or process of what I did. The challenge is for a product like Funday, it needs to taste excellent. Because if you deliver a product that's nutritionally really beneficial but doesn't taste very good, you might have a customer once and then never again. So it was the finesse and fine tuning of that recipe that's probably the hardest part. So flavor up 0.1%, stevia down 0.1%. When you needed to make a 5 health star claim, so you know you needed to work within the way that they sort of deal with their calculations. It's a bit of like science, logic, problem solving, but really anyone can do it.
What were the biggest hurdles to get everything up and running once you've got the manufacturer, you've got the ingredients? Like, was it I imagine the MOQs, the minimum order quantities would be super high. What are they? And then how did you like get the funding?
There was a lot of challenges to start a business, particularly with gummy manufacturing. The MOQs are really, really high. So you're talking around 5,000 kilos per product, per variant. And we launched with 4 variants. So technically the MOQ would have been 20,000 kilos.
How many like units?
It's about 400,000 packets.
Holy shit.
It's 20 ton. So
holy shit, because we've been having like beauty brands on the podcast and they say 10,000. I'm like, whoo, 10,000, that's a lot.
About 100,000 per variant. So I guess the first conversation with the manufacturer was, is there room to move here? That's a really big risk for us. Can you help us out? Yeah. And so they reduced it to half of that.
Oh, great.
That's still 50,000 per product. You still got 200,000. Yeah. So I guess the main thing was really the challenges were finding a manufacturer that could do it and then transferring what was a kitchen recipe into a real manufacturing like process
at
scale. It's very different. So that whole process takes months. And then it's, well, great. So I'm going to bring in 400,000 packets and what am I going to do with it? Like, I need somewhere for it to go, right? Because it's got a shelf life. That's the problem with food,
what is
right?
The shelf life?
So we manufacture with 18 months from manufacture. If you compare it to, say, electronics or clothing, it's an indefinite shelf life in most cases. Beauty's a bit of a funny one because it's on, like, when you open it, it's when the shelf life starts typically. But food is really relentless. It ticks as soon as it's made.
Are you air freighting or sea freighting? Because it's like you're also running out of time if you sea freight.
Exactly. That was the challenge. All of that. I'd worked with Chemist Warehouse before on some other, like, previous roles. And I just essentially pitched and I said, if this was a product that I could deliver to you around these dates, is this something that you would support?
Yeah.
And just sort of had a very open dialogue with them because they're all, like, really reasonable people. And they said, this is great. Like, this is disruptive. It's solving a need in the market, it's solving a problem. And I said, well, like, I don't mean to be really cheeky, but, like, can you submit a purchase order so that I can submit a purchase order? Because there's a lot of risk in it from my end. And convince them to do that.
So you just pitched them, like, the brand, the sample.
Yep. What plans we had from a marketing perspective, how we were going to really drive growth, what we were going to do to drive incrementality in the retail, how we're going to drive in new customers.
Wow. And can you say how big that first purchase order was?
It was pretty small. So we purchased about 200,000 units for the first one. They would have taken maybe 20 or 30,000. So maybe 10, I don't think it was more than 15%.
Like, it doesn't help with the bulk of the product, but it gives you the validation to start talking to other suppliers.
Yeah. But the challenge was, to your point, like, this was now COVID. So we had set a date with the retailer, with Chemist Warehouse, but it wasn't going to be really ready for a while. And then you had about 60 days shipping time.
Yeah.
So to make sure that we still maintained presence on shelf and had this deal, we air freighted.
Right.
And that was incredibly expensive. Yeah. I think we spent, it was about $150,000 on air freight just to get stock there initially. And then we had stock going via sea, but then the stuff
least,
that came sold out.
Yeah,
and then
we had to air freight more. Warehouse is like the, like, happening place to be in during COVID. You couldn't get anywhere more popular.
So that element was luck. Like, how we went into different channels at different times was an element of a bit of strategy, but mainly luck. It was, well, people going into pharmacies because everyone needed a COVID test or a jab or whatever. And you could go into pharmacies at any time, but you couldn't, no one was really going, no one was driving. So no one's going petrol and convenience.
And what do you want when you've had the jabs? Some lollies.
That's some lollies. Exactly. So we were very lucky in that we started there and there was a lot of traffic. And really it was thanks to them that we sort of got a business happening. And fortunately that stock then started to sell through and started to then start finding other customers as well to start building, like, the sales pipeline.
So in terms of funding, like, how did you pay for the 200,000 units?
Yeah. So I'd saved up some money from previous roles. And I also set up a consulting business while I was starting Funday because I wasn't busy 5 days a week or 7 days a week, because there's only so much you can do when you don't have a product and it's current, you know, either being formulated or manufactured. So there's a lot of downtime. So I knew that I was good at vitamin supplements and particularly around Asia and sort of exporting vitamins into Asia. And there's a lot of demand for those services because typically the people that can answer those questions are already working for an existing business and it would be a conflict of interest for them to give information about the category. So I was like a lone soldier that had information.
Customers?
Well, I sort of got on these mailing lists of these consulting businesses that use, like, Bain and McKinsey and some other high net worth families as their customers.
Yeah.
And they sort of match up professionals in the industry with, say, consulting businesses, whoever's seeking that information. And it was all in US dollars and it was like an hourly rate of hundreds. And I was like, well, this is great because I can sustain some level of income. But fundamentally to fund the purchase orders, which were hundreds of thousands of dollars, it was personal, but also friends and family. So it was like, how do I not try sell down early on when I don't even know anything? And how do I try retain as much control as possible? And really only that first year was just running a tight ship. And only after the first 12 months we go and get finance from one of the big banks. And they were really helpful in supporting that with trade facilities. But until that point, it was really tough.
When I started Shopify, I got a job as a receptionist at a laser hair removal clinic just to, like, keep the money coming in. I think people sometimes, like, overlook the idea of a friends and family round, but that is, like, the easiest way compared to going to a bank or getting investors.
Absolutely. Well, there's too much. The bank won't give you finance in the beginning unless you've got enough security, unless you own homes and you've got heaps of stock or you've got some level of track record, because at that time you're really just giving them a forecast and you have no idea really. So there's genuinely too much risk for a bank to provide funding right up front. Or you can go to some other finance companies that are charging don't know, 18, 20%. And they really hurt you when it comes to interest repayments. So there are other options in the market, but they're really, often they're not great.
With your business, how much of it is direct to consumer versus through a wholesale?
The bigger we sort of grow and the bigger we get, e-commerce takes a smaller chunk of the business because
you can get it more easily through an existing.
That's right. But also, I mean, if you look at where people are buying confectionery generally, we like sort of have the data. Over 90% of people are still buying confectionery in retail. E-commerce is a great business and it's still growing, like as a percentage of share.
It's for the super fans.
It's for the super fans. But as we become more accessible, we're now in 5,000 stores.
Yes, slowly.
Well, we need a reason for people to come online. And so we've set up really from the early days, a loyalty program and a subscription-based program. So as far as I know, we're probably the only subscription-based confectionery business in Australia.
Oh, very clever.
And definitely, I think the only one with a loyalty program.
Yeah.
But we sort of see ourselves as a bit of a tech business, and it's a bit of a tech play when it comes to that. You know, we've got over 100,000 people on the database of this is just lollies. It still only represents a small chunk of the business, but that e-commerce side of the business is hugely beneficial because not only is it a bit more profitable because you go direct, but you actually can interact with the customer and ask them how they feel about the products, where they're eating the products, what products they like or don't like. And a lot of our new product development comes from literally just emailing. If you go on our Instagram now, it's, hey guys, tell us out of these four options, which one do you want?
Yeah, love that.
And that's really genuine feedback that we take. We really scan that across what's happening in the major supermarket and say, these look like the top priorities for us as a business. So when we launch something, we know people really want it.
What's your advice for our listeners to like get stocked?
Online is a really great place because it's a fairly low risk, high margin channel that you can control and you can communicate and adjust things. Say you launch a product today, you know, there's a big risk going into a big major because you have to produce all of that stock. And if you haven't validated that concept, even at a small scale, you could be putting in a product that looks bad, tastes bad, just doesn't resonate because it's not solving a problem. But if you do it on a smaller scale, like online,
you kind of have like one shot with the wholesalers.
That's right.
Yeah.
And once you've ruined that relationship, it's very hard to come back. So I think online is a really great testing ground. You can also then take the data and say, this is our top performing SKU, it's doing X or the loyalties Y, and actually taking something to the retailer rather than saying, hey, this is brand new. It's never been launched, but we've never done this before. Take a punt on us. This is a way to de-risk the retailer. And I think that's sort of where the world's going to. You should be able to set up your own online store and get some traction before you go into retail now.
You've got great branding. Did you do it yourself? Did you use like a brand consultant? Was this the same brand from when you launched?
Largely, yes. I think I listened to your podcast, if you're not embarrassed about your first iteration or something. So I have to say, probably from a product perspective, there's an element of like being a bit embarrassed about some of the products that we put out, you know, in the first couple of months. But in terms of branding, we haven't changed that much. We've changed a little bit, but not that much. And I feel really strong about that we're doing things right with it because it's resonated with people from day one.
I guess maybe with food, you can't be as like, let's just launch. You kind of need it to.
Correct.
You're consuming it. Yeah.
Exactly. And we had a brand.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The agency that helped us in the early days, and probably the biggest thing for the success of the brand, was when I started, it was about sugar reduction, and it was, how do we get a really tasty lolly? But it was significantly lower sugar, and it was very functional. I was thinking about it like, okay, what's the dietary fiber and what's the Health Star? And I wasn't really thinking about the holistic brand. I think I wanted to call it Sweetwise at the beginning, which was like being conscious around sugar. But as part of the consultant coming in and running a couple day workshop for all of us, it was like, well, hold on, like, have we got this the wrong way around? And what are our thoughts on confectionery during our lifetime? And we all agreed as kids, we loved lollies and we loved confectionery. Whether it was going to a swimming carnival or going to like school on special days, there was always like lollies around you and you felt really excited by it. But as you become older, you're like, oh, this is really bad for me. Oh, like, I feel really guilty eating this. This is like a bit of a guilty pleasure. And you sort of lose the like enjoyment factor because it's just clouded by guilt. And we were like, well, what if as a brand, we can make people enjoy lollies like a kid again? So like we trademarked Enjoy Lollies Like a Kid Again. Like that's the fundamental core of our business. And it's all about how do we transpose people as adults back to being a kid and giving them that sense of enjoyment as when they was a kid and they ate it and they just had like frivolous enjoyment and fun. So that's where a lot of our marketing stems from in terms of the nostalgia aspects of it. And the other thing was a lot of the brands in the market, very messy, very complicated packaging. They were 150, 200 gram serving sizes. We had feedback that consumers were eating a whole bag, but they only intended to eat five. But once you pop, you can't stop. And so we said, all right, well, let's portion size it. Let's make it 50 gram bags, which is one serve. So you can open it, eat the whole thing. It's very low in sugar. It's about 3 grams in the whole bag, not added. It's got prebiotic fiber. It's got about 30% of your recommended daily intake and like around 100 calories in a packet, in a serving. And how good for people to say, I don't feel bad. I feel great opening it. It's got functional, genuinely good functional benefits and I don't have to overeat. Like it's portion controlled. So a lot of those, that strategy in terms of the way it looked, the size of the bag, the name, like being Funday, which is about
so
the
much
fun
better
aspect.
Than Sweetwise. Oh, I think it's just, you don't want to be wise. You're having a lolly.
100%. Sweetwise sounded like a campaign by the government to reduce your sugar. And so that was the advice. And that's the power of bringing people around you that are just better. Because I would have called it Sweetwise.
Yeah,
and
now that you've got the experience, you're like, that you get it now.
I get
it. A few years ago.
Four years ago, I had no idea. Yeah. I didn't even know the difference between brand and marketing. I was like, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
And now I have witnessed it firsthand, the power of both of those things and the power of brand. And all of those small little details that we sort of came up with in the early days have definitely set us up in the way that we have now. Yeah.
What's the best marketing campaign you've done?
Probably something we've got on at the moment, which is our first foray into above the line advertising and billboards and bus shelters and digital screens. It's just been the first time since the business has started that we've been incredibly strategic around bringing together all aspects of our marketing. So we've got billboards and we've got a lot of out-of-home displays currently for the next couple of months. But at the same time, we're engaging all the fundamental parts of the business that were core to building the brand, which were social media, influencer outreach, press, sampling. So it's become the first time we've really integrated everything that makes us Funday and everything that we can leverage all together in a coordinated campaign. Whereas previously it's always been, let's do a sampling thing or let's do a press release. This is like all coordinated,
strategic. You can't get away from us.
And we will find you.
Yes. And that's the power of having like so many touch points. It creates more saliency.
Yep.
It creates more like, it makes you more front of mind.
Absolutely.
Because I think like if you just see it once, you might just forget it.
Yep.
And so how have you found that so far?
It's still early days.
Yeah. That's the thing above the line. It does take time. It's not like an online thing where you get that instant gratification of a sale or a follower. Like
above the line is an investment in brand long-term. Like we don't see it as something that's going to start delivering increase of sales in the stores today. It's what we need to do to protect ourselves and grow the brand in the future. But there are a lot of other tactical marketing tools that we use, like promotions, displays in supermarkets, sampling, that we know will encourage the sales, but they're not as good as brand building exercises. It's more like a sales strategy or a sales tactic. So it's early days. We're a business built, you know, in 2021. We are very tech focused and we use tech platforms to measure brand activity, where typically it's like, cool, we're going to go spend all this money on above the line, but does it work? And so we've set ourselves KPIs and we can measure ourselves across awareness, consideration, usage, and preference.
What tech platform do you use?
It's called Tracksuit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a New Zealand business. I think I've probably given them a lot of business. So yeah. I should have an affiliate code or something.
Yeah. Fun day 10.
But it's just smart because businesses want to invest, but you never really know the ROI. And this way you can say, well, if my brand awareness in female 18 to 44 is X, and you draw a line in the sand and say, here's my milestone. We're now going to engage in a 3-month campaign for above the line. And in 3 months' time, you track where you're at. And you can also see where your competitors are at as well. So you really start to see if things are moving the needle or not. And as a brand, you go, I think my target audience is a 25 to 55-year-old female, right? But you don't really know.
Yeah.
And you can't really validate that, except all your marketing efforts are trying to reach that person. This tool, and there are other tools like it, you can start to granularly, like on a granular level, break down those demographics and say, what's our awareness like for that age group? Are we over-indexing, under-indexing? Are we starting to see an increase in older people, like 60 plus? And are we doing anything to actually reach those people and do more? So you start to be a bit more strategic. I just like to use those sort of tech platforms to help give us a bit more data and support to make decisions. I think it's important, like in today's age, when you have those abilities and software.
It's like the McDonald's thick shake. People thought that they were drinking it. It's like kids drinking it. And then when they did the research, it was actually like people on their commute home that wanted something slow to drink for the whole ride, and people who don't drink coffee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's the power of insight.
Let me change it up with, what's the biggest fuck up you made?
There's been a lot. It's a big fuck up, but I also am proud in the way that the team dealt with it. Because I'm a firm believer in, you can only control what you can control. And if you can't, just don't even think about it. Don't even worry about it. Just don't let it happen again. We had a fruity vegan beer, which we've actually since discontinued. And we ordered too much of it. I don't even know why. It just happened. It is what it is. It was on the water and it got here. And we're like, what are we going to do with it? Like, it's got a shelf life. And so with about 6 months to go, which sounds like enough time, but the retailers won't accept it.
Yeah.
Because they need like a minimum life of 9 months or 12 months.
Right.
And I was scrolling on TikTok and I saw freeze-dried candy was now a thing. Everyone's posting like these people crunching freeze-dried lollies and freeze-dried everything, Skittles and all these sorts of stuff. And I was like, well, we've got product. Like, could we turn this into a new product? The benefit of freeze-drying is that it actually freezes the shelf life. It's almost like an indefinite shelf life. So again, I went on LinkedIn and I found like the guy that does freeze-drying and I was like, hey, this is my thought. And then he goes, give me a call in the morning. So I called him in the morning, like 10 hours later. And we started literally unpacking a lot of the fruity bears that we had, sent it to him. He freeze-dried them, sent them back. We're like, they taste really good. And we sort of turned this, what would have been a write-off of stock, into a limited edition Funday freeze-dried gummy bear. Yeah, it was a really like shitty situation, like a big stuff up for demand planning, forecasting. But we're like, cool, what do we do now? We've got a problem. How do we solve it? And we're like, well, sounds like a pretty good option. And so we did that. And the whole team rallied around it, went to the warehouse and we unpacked and packed. And it was a bit of a group sort of team bonding exercise, funnily enough. It was just interesting. We were the first healthy freeze-dried candy, like globally, as a result of it. It's a niche, but, you know, we got there.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What are the challenges you're currently facing today?
I think probably just growing pains, like just day-to-day growing pains of having
people. No, I'm joking. Yes.
Well, like people, processes, like those are the things that genuinely change the most, like as the business grows. So we're onboarding at a rate faster than we ever have before. And we're not, it's not even that big of a team. We're probably 11 or 12 now. But
I can even warn you. For me, it was when it was at 12 or 15 people when everything just got way more tricky. Like you needed to kind of like, it wasn't that small, fun little team. I mean, it's still fun, sorry. But it wasn't like this, like it changed.
Yeah. I think like there's a point in which it becomes like a real business. Like when you have a lot of people and they come in and, you know, they expect the desk and the computer and like just basic stuff, which they should expect. But as a founder, you're like, okay, can you go buy your own computer? Or can you go buy your own chair? Or like whatever it is, because you're just trying to hustle and make it work. But you do hit a point where you sort of need to be more professional in the way that you deal with people, deal with an office and who cleans the dishes. There's all these things that you've never had to deal with before.
A cleaning roster.
So
and people be like, oh my God, you're not going to just like take your own bins out? Like,
So we just moved into an office, and for the first time we've had to organize waste removal, other insurance, cleaners.
We had to go to IKEA. We used to put our rubbish on the street. We're like, no, you can't, you're a company. You can't do that. And then they got so told off. I'm like, no one tells you this.
No, you just learn it.
You don't learn this.
Yeah. That's not what they teach you at uni.
Until you like F it up.
Those are the biggest challenges. You know, we've got a lot of tier one customers, you know, massive retailers, and the bigger you get, the risk becomes greater because you can't let them down. Their volume becomes higher. Customers have an expectation now. You're not, you know, the variance between like one batch and another has to be very minor, if any. Whereas in, you know, when the first year, it's like if things are a bit different, your target group that you're selling to is so small that it's not the end of the world. But you just become the challenge of becoming a real business, you know, and that's sort of where we're at now. Exactly. And it's the transition of startup into, I like to think of us as a mature startup because I love everything about what makes a startup so successful, which is just the attitude.
The agility, the hustle. Yeah.
And the danger of becoming like a real big business is you lose all that and you go safe.
And you become the incumbent, not the disruptor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I like to think of us as a mature startup. We're trying to sort our shit out and get better at fixing process and all of that. But I still love the essence of just being nimble and agile.
Are you still wearing many hats?
I think I'm just across everything.
Yeah.
Eventually I'd love not to be across everything. And I think as the business grows and we can hire more people, that will happen. But certainly it feels very natural to know sort of everything that's going on. To the same extent, I'm not like micromanaging and I have good people that I really trust and they will go and do stuff and really just come check with me if they're not sure. But largely it's just like you're on your own devices, like go and sort it out. And I think that sort of worked really well.
And what's the best advice that you've received that's really helped you?
It was actually from a friend of mine who runs a pretty successful business. And I was catching up with him and I think I was just obviously a bit stressed and, you know, lots going on. And I was like, oh, you know, like one day I'm going to do this or I'm going to do a joint venture with this and, you know, I'll actually eventually make some like real money or like, you know, sort of having that conversation. He's like, dude, like just think about it. Like you're running a business by yourself. You've got amazing staff. You've got a brand that people love. You get the flexibility to go pick up your daughter from daycare at 4:30, 5 o'clock or whenever you want. Those are really unique things that not many people have. And you should probably just really enjoy, basically right now is your peak. Like he's like, you're living the dream. Like you're running a business. People love it. The product's great. And he's like, if you keep kicking the can down the road and be like, oh, in 2 years' time, this will happen. And I'm just going to do this a bit longer. And I'm not going to take a holiday because in 2 years' time, I'm going to have 5 more people and then I'll be able to do it. He's like, that's bad because you'll never be happy. Like you just keep pushing and pushing it. So he's like, just try enjoy work, like try enjoy as much as stressful as it is, try enjoy all of this stuff and know it doesn't last for very long. And this is it. Like this is the peak. And you may start another business in the future, but you're in it right now. So you know what you know.
Yeah, it is the journey because if I look back and like everything fails, it's not really what I've accumulated in wealth or whatever. It's the fact that like I could have been doing this shitty accounting job, no offense, a job that I hated, not accounting, just any job that you hated.
Yeah.
But it's the experience that I've had.
Yeah.
And it is like, yeah, the flexibility, the time with your family. And it's sometimes work might even give you more instant gratification because you're achieving this thing, you're having this goal. But, you know, there's always going to be a new, bigger goal. And it's kind of like never ending.
Definitely keep shifting the goals and you secure an account you've been after for like 3 years. Like Cole said no to us for 3 years. And then they came around and they're like, cool, you're in. I was like, cool. All right, what's next?
It
was just like, okay, like those are the moments, you know, that and we now, and my wife is like, you need to celebrate
you need
more.
To celebrate,
like this
yeah.
is like, this is it. Like you've been waiting for so long for this. It's natural for goalposts to sort of just keep changing. And, you know, what I thought was a successful business 4 years ago, I'm like, well, that's not successful. Like I need to like triple that if I want to be successful. So it's just also being really comfortable with like where you want it to go and how big you want it to be and managing that.
And so what does home life look like for you? You've got a daughter. How old is she?
Willow's 3. My wife's great. Like, she also works full time. She's a doctor. Home life is challenging, but also really great at the same time. Like, we're two full time people with a daughter, and we try to make homemade food and like all those sorts of things and spend time together. So it's not unusual.
Yeah.
But I guess for me, work never stops.
So what do you do to help you like stay motivated and focused?
I think maybe having a daughter like probably motivates me a bit more to make
everyone
sure.
Everyone go get a daughter.
Just like to make sure the product is as good as it can be, the healthiest it can be, because like she's now eating Funday. And I need to be always 100% confident that what I'm putting in the products and the texture and the flavor and all that stuff is good enough for my family and my friends. And I've countless messages weekly from friends and family saying, oh, I've just bought this product or bought this. Like, so what's motivating me is like people surrounding me are consuming Funday, and there's like a pressure,
yeah,
a nice pressure to continue just to innovate and make it as good as it can be. But you know, the financial metrics and stuff really motivate me, like setting KPIs and internal goals to get to this revenue or improving this margin. And I like that aspect of it. Yeah. And having a nice team now and an environment where there's people in the office makes it more fun to go to work. Whereas, you know, in the early days it was me in my study at home by myself. That's draining. Like, that's really draining. I know I've got things that I need to do. Like, I loved doing yoga when I didn't have a kid, and I would go every Saturday morning and do yoga and other things to sort of unwind. And I'm pretty shit at keeping that up, to be honest. So a big focus for me for this year was like, I set in my calendar now, I got a gym. Like, it's in my calendar because I abide by my calendar. And so I literally have to put gym in there, and I spend a day just not taking any meetings. So I'm feeling motivated and I'm feeling clear about what's going on.
Besides lollies, what's your guilty pleasure?
Probably like fragrance.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, like it's weird, but like I spend a lot of money on like good fragrance.
Yeah.
And I see no barrier. Like, I walk into Mecca and I get like very excited, and I'll often just buy something even though I don't need it. So it's where I spend like a lot of my money. Like, I love Le Labo and I love a lot of those brands. And I don't know. It's just like a weakness of mine.
Did you prefer two truths and one lie?
So I've been skydiving, but I'm scared of heights. I only eat sour lollies, and I was one episode away from being on televised MasterChef.
Ooh. Okay. I think surely you can't only eat sour lollies. Like, surely you're not just in your kitchen making sour lollies only. That's the lie.
That is the lie.
Yay!
Good job. Good job.
Oh my God. I mean, I almost like, one of these, like, you know, there's entrepreneur groups where, yeah, you go like skydiving, yeah, and everyone went, and I was like the only person that sat out. I'm, yeah, like, guys, like, you know, they were just all like, you're a pussy. I'm like, I don't care.
Well, I'm super scared of heights.
How did you get talked into it?
I like just blissful ignorance. Like, I went up there
not realizing how bad it would be.
Yeah, like, to be honest,
how did you jump?
Well, the guy jumped for me and I just fell with him, sort of thing. No,
were you regretting it the first moment he jumped?
Oh, I think I blanked out for a couple of seconds, so I'm not sure. But it's one of those things I feel really proud that I've done. Yeah. And I'm still really scared of heights. Like, it didn't solve a fear for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think the perception of height up there is so different that you sort of lose perception of really what's going on. And so, like, if I stand on a balcony of a building, I freak out. Like, it's my worst nightmare, that.
Yeah.
But if I go in an aeroplane and jump off, I didn't have the same appreciation
surreal.
For height.
Like, what is this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the feeling of falling is you don't have it. It's more like floating. So I'd highly recommend it from someone who's shit scared of heights.
Fuck no. And then the MasterChef?
I think I was studying law at the time, and I just like loved cooking, and I still absolutely love it, but I had way more time back then. And I applied 1 year and I got through the first round, and that was that. And then the next year came around, this was like 2008 or something, 2009, when it was still probably in its like second or third year.
Yeah.
So it was still a big thing. I then got through to the final round before TV. I got, you know, selected, and it was all looking really good. And then I cooked like a signature dish, which I just completely stuffed up. Like, it was so bad.
Ugh.
Tried to like hot smoke salmon. I'd like never done it before.
Yeah, yeah.
I just went rogue,
yeah,
and like completely fucked it. And then they're like, oh, come back next year. And I was like, I'm not really sure I actually want to be on TV.
Yeah.
And I was
maybe
like,
one day you'll go on like a celebrity MasterChef, because, you know, like, you'll be like, it's the dessert buffet guy.
I'm not really a celebrity and I'm not really a chef.
No, but like,
so I'm not
but
sure
your brand, yeah, is, know, you know? They'll be like, that'll set the context, you know?
True. Well, yeah. I'd be open to some level of like cooking show.
Yeah.
But I think the pressure would get to me. Like, I like home cooking. And I just like going rogue with like, my wife kills me because I never read a recipe. And she's like, you always think you know better than all the chefs. And I was like, just I can't help the creativity, you know, coming out.
Well, I've fucked up microwave mac and cheese, so I can't really talk. What advice would you give your younger self?
I think part of what's made Funday get to this point that it is me having a wide range of, you know, not super in depth, but the understanding of a lot of how business functions across operations to finance and accounting, marketing, like just a lot of touch points. And so I think it's been a while since I've been at uni and school, so I'm not sure exactly what they teach, but if it's anything like the way it was like, you know, pick a major, like become an expert in accounting or like become a lawyer or whatever it is. The challenge with that is you become so siloed and you become very narrow, a narrow thinker in terms of what you apply that to. So if you're an accountant, you come in, you like just know the accounting, but you've never touched anything else. I loved being in businesses that I had huge amount of responsibility across almost every facet of the business. I think that's like allowed me to just to be okay at everything and understand every department in the business, get into industry and just work in exciting businesses where you have lots of opportunities, even if it's maybe an area that you don't necessarily think you want to work at long term. Just work there for a couple of months, 6 months, just to figure it out and get an understanding for it, because it makes you a more well-versed, well-rounded individual. And if starting a business is what you want to do, like you end up doing most of the stuff in the first few years of the business anyway, so you need to know it. And then I think it's finding a product, a service, whatever it is, that actually solves a problem for people. And if it's not solving a problem, or you've just adding one element to an existing thing, but the barrier to entry or barrier to challenge that is so low, really rethink what you're going to do and try come up with a genuine solution that's hard to replicate ideally. And then whatever you decide, just give it 100%. Like if it means quitting a role, investing a bit more money, raising a bit more money, like whatever, you don't want to get to the end of it and be like, oh shit, I only gave it 50%. I reckon I could have done more there or more there. If you fail, like fail gracefully and say, I've tried everything and I've learned a shitload. The worst thing you want to do is get to the end and be like, oh yeah, I was working like 4 days a week there and I only had 10% of my time and I've blown all this money and now 2 years of my time. Like, I don't think anyone feels good getting to that stage. So just conviction.
Love that. Yeah. Well said. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
Yay.
You. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, just round of applause for my.
Oh, round of applause for you as well.
Yay. Okay, that's it from me for now. Thanks for listening. And if you're loving the podcast, don't forget to leave us a review. And if you want more, join the conversation on the podcast Instagram at thelazyceo_podcast. Link to the show notes. Catch you next Tuesday.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.